Hi, this is Maxwell Grenold from Biermannsdorf, Switzerland, and you're listening to the Disneyland edition of the Diz Unplugged.
Hello and welcome to the Diz Unplugged Roundtable Discussion Disneyland Edition for the week of July 31st, 2011. I'm your host this week, Tony Spittel. I'm joined by fellow Disneyland correspondents Wayne Toigo, Nancy Johnson, and Tom Bell. In this week's show, Tom will give us a look at his Disney cruise to Alaska, and Wayne will share some history on Sleeping Beauty Castle. Also going up this week is Tom's interview with Stephen Clark, the head of D23, who discusses the upcoming D23 Expo. All that plus this week's news and roundtable rapid fire on this Disneyland edition of the Diz Unplugged. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi, boys.
Greetings.
Tom, how are you? Are you okay?
I am tired. It's been a busy 2 weeks.
Where are you doing?
Did you sell some stuff?
You called me Traveling Tom, and I just can't stop now. It's Wayne's fault.
Oh, you got to come down to Disneyland next weekend, then.
Torture.
And I feel so bad that you're tired. It's such a hard life going on cruise after cruise after trip.
We should probably thank Maxwell for sending in that intro.
Thanks, Maxwell.
Yay, Max. And a shout out to his mom, Jen, who's our Dizera in the crowd.
And for those of you who want to get your intro on our show, just send it to Tom at wdwinfo.com. And you could be next on the show. Have you guys sent any into the main podcast? Because I want to be on Pete's show.
Nah.
I sent him one. I sent him one. You want to hear it?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, please.
This is Stephen Clark, head of D23, the official Disney fan club, and you're listening to Diz Unplugged.
Oh, my goodness.
Awesome.
You like that?
Very good.
I don't think he'll play it.
What was the phrase I used? What was the phrase my husband used?
Frankenbite?
Yeah, Frankenbite.
No, he actually, I got him to say that.
Oh, I thought you were just doing the greatest imitation ever.
No.
I mean, it's an obscure imitation.
No, I thought he was like editing like a crazy person.
He actually agreed to say that for me, so.
Wow. Okay, does anybody have any housekeeping?
Usual reminders. Tony's Twitter bell run.
Yes, and I've helped out a little bit.
Yes.
Just so you guys know that to make it easier for if you just want to tell somebody how to get to the page to donate, if you go to tinyurl.com/DizRunner, it will automatically take you to the page to donate. So it's easier to just tell people or post it if you're doing a Twitter feed. So it's a smaller, you can text it to people now because it's a nice small link, tinyurl.com/DizRunner, and it will go straight there. So we need some cash.
Donate early and often.
Anybody else with housekeeping before I go? Okay, I do have a housekeeping longer than usual mini segment because if the people that know and follow my follow my goings to Disneyland often for dinner here and there. We really love Tangaroa Terrace. My wife loves it. Like it's going to Hawaii without being in Hawaii. So we went. Yes, it's so we went yesterday for dinner, just to eat dinner, and there was a new item on the menu.
Ooh.
So I wanted to share that because I had it and it was actually really, really good. It's the it's a teriyaki New York strip with the fried long beans, which are the same things you can get in Trader Sam's.
Yum.
And the jasmine rice and the slaw. And it was $14.99.
Wow.
It wasn't originally on the menu, and I ate it, and I was full. It was cooked very well, and I thought, is there any other counter service place that has a steak? And I couldn't find one. And then I looked at all the Disneyland area restaurants that had steaks, and you weren't going to find one for $14.99. And it was real. I mean, I enjoyed everything. It was good. I was pleasantly surprised. I actually went back in. I said, "No, this was really good." And they said, "Tell the chef." And so I told him, and I actually spoke with him for a few minutes. And I said, "I love what you guys are doing here. It seems like it's a different model." And he actually shared that resort wide, They've been working on quality. He said, focusing on the quality. And I told him, well, I've seen that, so you guys are doing a good job of improving the quality. But I just wanted to share that new menu item is out there, and it was really good. And it was, for $14.99, you're not going to get that much food anywhere else. And to get a steak at a counter service was pretty awesome. And I did take a picture, and we will put a link to the picture in the show notes so you can actually see what it looks like. So,
sounds really cool.
Yay.
And that's it for housekeeping. Let's go over to Nancy for this week's news.
In a news story that came out in the Vancouver Sun this week, Barton Memorial Hospital in South Lake Tahoe, California, sent 900 employees back to school in June to learn how to provide better service. And the school they sent them to was Disney's University. Disney understands guest services, said Kathy Cocking, Barton's vice president of operations, and we're not as good as we want to be. In classes at the hospital, two Disney consultants taught employees how to think more creatively and improve their attitude towards their job. They stressed that patients don't just want to get good clinical care, but personal attention too. And actually, this is something that I've had experience with since I work in the healthcare industry in radiology, and I've done training like this with Disney before, and it really does, the two fields really do go hand in hand with their guest services, so I thought that was pretty cool. Our favorite hotel union is staging another demonstration in Irvine,
that.
California. The Unite Here Local 11, which has caused its fair share of controversy at Disneyland by not ratifying its contract, went into the Irvine Embassy Suites Hotel and dropped painted signs from the edges of the atrium balconies inside the hotel, supporting a yes on state proposition SB 432, which is being proposed to require hotels to use fitted sheets instead of flat sheets on their beds to improve the health of the hotel workers. And I think it has something about providing mops for housekeepers too. And so I'm really impressed with the way the general manager of the hotel handled it. He met a small group, you know, they were inside his hotel. Technically, he could have kicked their butts out for trespassing. But instead, he met with them. He thanked the group for their thoughts and then politely asked them to leave.
I'm all for some of the actual requests that they're doing. And, I mean, I can understand if I did that all day, then it might help. But they seem to be really militant about getting this stuff done. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I like the ideas of them having fitted sheets and the mops and all that. But do you have to go into some hotel
on
vacation and boom, drop the sign out? I mean,
now, Disney spokeswoman Susie Brown was asked about this in a previous interview. And she said, at the Disney resorts, they're actually giving a bed wedge to lift the mattress so they can do the corners with a flat sheet and to help them from, you know, stressing their backs on it. Who knows where that's going to go? And my third story, firefighters removed 24 people from California Screamin' after a backpack fell out of a ride vehicle and onto the track. It was about 6:30 p.m. in the evening, and it caused all the vehicles to automatically stop. No injuries or collisions were reported. About 24 people in one of the vehicles was stuck on the track, and it took about an hour for firefighters to remove them one at a time by a ladder. About 20 fire officials responded, including members of the Anaheim Fire Department's Urban Search and Rescue Team and paramedics stationed at California Adventure. They had to use a ground ladder to reach up to the riders who were no more than 20 feet up at the bottom of the Mickey Loop.
Oh.
Apparently, the car kept going back and forth and back and forth till it finally stopped.
And then they had to, like, winch it up the hill to get it over or something like that.
I guess, yeah.
Okay, so whose fault is it? That's the question. Come on, let's send the blame. It's a backpack. Who's bringing a backpack on that? Who's bringing that on the ride?
fastening it into the thingy like they were supposed to.
Well, it won't fit in the little bags, okay. But you can put it around your leg or something like that.
Yeah, I always
so
put the stuff.
Fall out. Yeah.
I always put it around my leg.
Yeah.
I'm more curious about the train that missed the stop at the top of that hill and was allowed to continue down to the bottom of the loop with less momentum. I want to see how they reprogram the ride to prevent that from happening again.
See, that's why Wayne is so awesome. I didn't even think of that. He's going all engineering, E equals MC squared on us.
I'm the business geek. That's the first thing I thought.
Although, don't start giving us things because then I won't have anything to offer. So just stop with the...
Hey, I know I'm not.
Okay. So explain that again, Wayne, because now I've got to think about it.
Most of the coasters are designed with some kind of emergency stop at critical points all through the ride. I know there's a set of brakes that's right before the big Mickey loop. So my question is, no matter where the ride sensed that there was a problem and needed to do an e-stop, an emergency stop, why didn't those brakes clamp on and prevent the train from even entering the hill leading to the loop? That not being the case, the train should have had enough inertia to at least take it through the loop and up to the next set of brakes on the next hill. One way or another, some programming's definitely in order for that ride.
Okay, I think I've just seen the future of our Diz Unplugged Disneyland edition. Wayne, investigative reporter, let's go. Yes. You can as they're walking out, you could be, accosting them. Hey, do you have any comments? And then they slam the door, and I think that'd be exciting.
Nice.
Of course, you're the one doing this, the chasing. I'm just listening to it at the end. But
great.
I'd like to see. That's interesting. Wow. Okay. What a way to end the news. Is that it, Nancy?
And that's the news.
Okay, that's the news. So, on the very detail...
That was my Walter Cronkite-ness for the day.
Well, it's good you did Walt...
Exactly what that was.
Mentioning Walter Cronkite, considering we talked about Medicare and the wear of sheets and the engineering, it's like a deep, good, high-quality newscast we've got going here. So, to bring it back to Disney, less intense and important, rapid fire, who would like to go first?
Ooh, I'll take it.
Okay, after the silent pause, go ahead.
Okay. At the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, LACMA, for all of us locals, in the Resnick Pavilion.
LACMA? What kind of acronym is that?
I'm a local. I don't call it LACMA.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
And all of us up on this side of the hill call it LACMA.
Okay.
Anyway, there is an exhibit going through October 31st of this year, and it is... The Art of Tim Burton. And this exhibition brings together over 700 drawings, paintings, photographs, moving image works, storybook boards, puppets, concept artworks, maquettes, costumes, cinematic ephemera, including art from a number of unrealized and little-known personal projects. Danny Elfman, Burton's longtime collaborator and composer of pretty much every single one of his movies' musics, has created a score.
Wow.
To completely accompany the exhibit. Also, there are two large-scale outdoor artworks on the campus, which you can see for free. There's a topiary inspired by Edward Scissorhands. And there's an enormous figure of Balloon Boy based on amalgamation of characters that Burton first introduced in 1997 book The Melancholy Death of Oyster Boy and Other Stories.
And this is at the Los Angeles Museum of Art, which is where?
On Wilshire Boulevard. Basically just east of, it's kind of sandwiched in between Beverly Hills and downtown.
Okay, thank you. Interesting, Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the fact that Danny, like Tim Burton can't do anything without Danny Elfman. Like you think like he's walking in his house and like, Danny, can you make a song for me to walk these three steps? Like I love the pair of the two together. I just find it interesting that I'm going to do an art exhibit. Hey, I need a score. I just think it's funny that that he's funny or interesting that he's writing a score for. Like every single thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, wow. Next rapid fire?
I'll go. I just wanted to remind everyone about the upcoming D23 Expo, which is coming very soon now. The Expo is Friday, August 19th through Sunday, August 21st. You can still get tickets. Adult tickets are $47 per day or $136 for all 3 days. For D23 members, it's $40 per day or $115 for all 3 days. The schedule of events is out and can be found on the D23 Expo site. There are so many wonderful things that are a part of this Expo, and this year's event is shaping up to be as exciting as the first one. For all Disney fans, I strongly encourage you to find at least one day where you can go to the Expo. You will have a ball.
Thanks for that, Wayne, and to let everybody know, the Diz Unplugged Disneyland Edition will be covering D23 and sharing all that information with you. In particular, Wayne and Tom, who will be on the scene reporters.
Along with senior correspondent Dave Parfit will be there also, all three days.
Even maybe some of us other people might actually show up.
Yeah, we might.
We might. That would be a surprise. But if you can't be there, we've got it covered for you.
And if you see us, don't hesitate to come up and say hi and introduce yourself. Very good, Tom.
No, I like.
Do you have one of choice that you would like to request?
No, I'm easy.
No, I agree. No. See, you said it wrong.
The best drink in the world is a free drink.
No, don't. Yes, let's try that. Don't say hi. Don't introduce yourself. Give us the drink. Then you can do whatever you want. Yeah. I know. My wife will like that. I'm all about. I'm a taker. That's what I do. Okay. So I guess Tom.
Rapid fire. Okay.
Go ahead.
I think last show we talked about the extensive rehab of Matterhorn bobsleds, but there are a couple more rehabs that have been announced that are more than, say, a month or so long, so I wanted to go through them real quick. California Screamin', surprisingly, has a rehab from September 6th through October 14th. And then over at Disneyland, Pirates of the Caribbean and the Blue Bayou, of course, are down from September 7th through November 23rd. So a long rehab there. The other notable rehabs are the Haunted Mansion and Space Mountain for their Halloween overlays. Haunted Mansion will be down from August 29th through September 15th, and Space Mountain will be down from September 9th through September 15th. A quick overlay on that one. So the Halloween overlays will start on September 16th, and also September 16th, Remember Dreams Come True returns to Disneyland, and that will be playing nights where there is not a Halloween party.
All right. Thank you for that. And final rapid fire, myself. Thank you for cheering for me. That makes me feel special. Just to remind everybody, but let everybody know that the Southern California Costcos have a four-day park hopper ticket for $239. 99 cents. It's valid from now through October 19th, 2011. And a few special details about this. It's blacked out on August 21st and 22nd, which coincides around D23. There's no Magic Morning entries. However, you can use it on a day and then come back and use it a month later, as long as it's not after October 19th, so you don't have to do four consecutive days. And it also includes a $50 Disney gift card. So $239 minus that $50 gift card, which is good for merchandise and food at the parks. Just wanted to share that with everyone that's trying to save a few bucks and go to Disneyland.
One more rapid fire, Tony. Effective August 1st, Engineer Toys and everything from there to the right, the ice cream shop and the bakery are closed.
Oh, they're finally going to take everything out. Goodbye, train.
The other half closes, I think, at the end of August, but that half is closing now. It's closed now.
Okay, so the ice cream shop is going to be closed.
Ice cream shop's closed.
So where am I supposed to get ice cream?
All those little carts.
Yeah. No, that's I think Burbank. I love Burbank ice cream.
And I love Burbank.
Well, yeah.
You're paid to.
Yes.
I did read that...
brought to you by the City of Burbank.
Chamber of Commerce.
Burbank.ca.gov.
I did read that Taste Pilots Grill is serving breakfast in the interim. since the bakery is closed.
That doesn't help my ice cream problem.
You can get it at Disneyland.
I know. I don't like
different places at Disneyland.
I'm okay.
Disneyland, get the ice cream, bring it into California Adventure.
No, I'll come into California Adventure after it's done. Sorry. Okay.
Sorry, so, I didn't mean to sidetrack you.
I know. I'm still thinking how I'm going to go there and do World of Color without ice cream. I can't do it. I can't do those things without each other.
Sniff.
I'm worried. I need a medical opinion, Nancy.
Cheer up for you.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm just trying to make... Okay. So speaking of feeling sorry for
that
myself.
That gut of yours doesn't need any ice cream until after that race.
Jeez!
I can't believe you went there. Wow. Okay.
That was my medical professional advice.
Okay. I won't give you any of my own medical professional advice. For
oh, that can only go wrong. Yes. So wrong.
Okay. That's okay. You're right. You know what? You are correct. Maybe Disney's doing this specifically so I won't go there to eat the ice cream, so I'll be in better shape to run and raise $2,000 for Give Kids the World. Okay.
Power to the town.
Now that my feelings are hurt.
Poor Tom.
Yeah, I know. Poor me. Tom.
Yes.
Tom, would you like to share with us about your great jealousy building for me, Disney cruise to Alaska that you just...
I sure will. I'll share a little. Pete from the Orlando podcast is going on the same cruise in a couple weeks, and I'm sure he will have a full report. But I just wanted to cover a couple things. This was my fifth cruise, and would be my...
I lost track. I've got to get one.
No, stop.
Three.
I was just trying to be dramatic. And my fourth seven-day cruise, so I'm really used to the seven-day cruises and how they flow. And for me, this cruise, while Alaska was beautiful, the weather was beautiful, the cruise was different. I don't know if it was the guests on board or what about it. It was just, it flowed differently.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I know my wife and I went on an Alaskan cruise, but we didn't go on the Disney Alaskan cruise back 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we were by far the youngest people on that. I mean, there was, the youngest person at the table that we ate with was in her 60s, other than us. So it was an older cruise. Was it like that on the Disney cruise?
It wasn't like that. It was more of a outdoorsy type crowd as opposed to the party crowd that's going to Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that was kind of reflected in the nightlife on board. You know, Wave Bands, the nightclub there on board, is usually the hub of entertainment. And I would go by there and, you know, it would be dead. Karaoke night, which wasn't until like the fifth night of the cruise or something like that. They didn't start till maybe 20 minutes late because they had no requests.
Wow.
There was, you know, maybe half a dozen people, maybe a dozen people in the room. And, you know, he wasn't getting any requests, so he didn't start. And it was just different. The other weird thing was how they organized the dinners and the pirate night and the shows. Normally, you'll have, on a seven-night cruise, you'll have your three signature dinners based on the three different restaurants. But then you'll also have a Golden Mickey's menu, which is one of the shows. You'll have a Captain's Gala menu. You'll have a Till We Meet Again menu, which is the last night. And then normally, you'll have a pirate night menu. Well, on the Alaska cruises, they've replaced the Pirate Night menu with a Taste of Alaska menu.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting.
But the weird thing is, they didn't do the Taste of Alaska menu on Pirate Night. They did it on a different night. So on Pirate Night, we had French food. We had our normal Triton's menu, which was kind of weird.
They're French pirates.
Yeah.
Sorry. It was a stretch, but...
But also that night, you know, the entertainment was weird because, you know, they have the three main shows, and instead of putting something else on Pirate Night, they did the Toy Show the Musical show on Pirate Night.
Was this strange because it was strange, or strange because you were used to something else?
Could be a little
question.
Both. And I think part of it may be how they have to do things in Alaska and, you know, where the ports are and when they can do the Pirate Night and just how things fell. But, you know, if they're not doing something in the main theater, they'll show a movie or something like that, and that's usually what they'll do on Pirate Night, is they'll show the latest movie that was on, you know, released or something like that. But it was the night before they had Cars 2, 3 in 3D at the big theater. And then Pirate Night, they had Toy Story the Musical.
I have a question. Going with kind of what Wayne said, Do you think some of the fact that maybe the nightlife wasn't as exciting from what you were expecting could have been the fact that it was still sunny at 11:30 at night?
This is a good point.
I mean, I'm just saying. And then the other question I had was, were there a lot of families more so
than
other?
No, I think
more than others, or was it about the same demographics
that
you noticed?
Yeah, it was the same demographic, but like I said, it's more people focusing on wanting to do stuff in the outdoors, as opposed to people wanting to go to the beach and sip tequila.
Okay, so maybe they're going out, riding the mountain bikes up the hill, and then they come home. They come back to the ship and they're exhausted because they rode mountain bikes all day in Alaska. Okay. Yeah.
But wait, was it sunny at 11:30 at night?
I have my navigators in front of me. We actually lost an hour of sleep. Oh no, I'm sorry, gained an hour of sleep. So by the third night, sunset was at 9:50, 9:36, 9:05. Yeah, actually seemed to be later than that.
And I was going for sunrise.
10:05 was the latest.
Okay. Well, you know, you are moving into that time of year up there.
Yeah. Okay, something they did right. The first day, we got to Skagway, which is the first stop in Alaska. They brought on fresh Alaska salmon.
Nice.
And that was one of the signature items on the menu that night, on the new Taste of Alaska menu. It was a huge piece of salmon. And I don't usually enjoy salmon. It's way too oily and fishy for me. I enjoy, you know, halibut or something like that. But this salmon was awesome. And, you know, we went to the Art of Entertaining, which is one of the chefs showing you how to make appetizers and stuff like that, things they do on the days at sea. And he kept telling us about, you know, we're going to bring on salmon, you know, when we get to Alaska, it'll be salmon for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I'd have to say he was right. It was awesome salmon because it was fresh. Another cool thing they did is they had on board at least two representatives from the National Park Service.
Cool.
And they gave, from the Forest Service. And they gave history of Alaska. And, you know, they had probably five or six different presentations in the Walt Disney Theater about the history of Alaska or the history of the forest and things they can do in the forest.
I think that's actually typical of all Alaskan cruises.
Okay.
I'm basing this on my great big scientific study of the one I went on with yours is two. But I remember when we went on ours, we went on Holland America, and they had, when we saw the glaciers and stuff, there was a Park Service dude in there sharing and everything. So.
One additional thing they did is they had the rangers do presentations in the Oceaneer Lab in the kids area. And so the kids were given a coloring book, basically, so they could become junior rangers. And they could, you know, complete, they had to go to two different presentations by the rangers that were based for the kids, and then complete a certain number of pages in this activity book, and they could get a Junior Ranger badge or a Junior Ranger patch, which I thought was really cool.
And you wanted the patch, didn't you?
I did, but my kid was slacking. So,
yeah, well.
But we heard that if they he did go to the presentations, he just didn't complete the book. But we understand that if we complete the book and mail it in, that they will send us the patch,
is supposed to be for your son, not your own backpack.
We'll put it on his backpack.
And then you'll take the backpack.
I would never. Yes. Unless it says Disney on it, then I might take it. Now, what I learned on this trip is that I won't do an Alaska trip again unless I have the budget to do excursions. Alaska is all about the excursions, and we didn't have the budget this time. So we did other things, but I think next time we will make sure that we can do something in each port. just because Alaska is beautiful country and you want to be able to see it.
I have to agree with you on the excursions part. Again, I didn't go on a Disney cruise, but I went on one, and then one of my friends I saw a few weeks ago was showing his Alaskan cruise, and I went to that port, and then he did different excursions, and went, oh, that looks cool, I should have done that, or I should have done that. They did a dog that actually got on dog sleds with their kid and did dog sledding. The excursions, you're right, are a big deal. And so if you're, just to reiterate basically what you said, if you spend the money on the cruise and then can't experience the Alaska part, and everybody knows I'm not an outdoorsy person, but in Alaska, it's so
awesome. Yeah, you have to be.
It's so overwhelming and amazing that we found excursions that weren't, you know, I didn't have to hike or anything, you know, I could ride a bike on a road. But I think that's an important point to make, is if you're going to do it, save up so you can do the excursions. What did you do in lieu of the excursions?
That was what I was going to talk about next. Let me back up one more thing that they did right. On the third day when we went to the glacier, it was a Tracyon Fjord, and we were going to the glacier. They took the kids out of the Oceaneer Lab and out of the Oceaneer Club up to the sports deck, which is on deck 10 forward. It's all enclosed by net. Mm-hmm. But the kids were up on deck playing soccer or doing crafts or whatever. But they were up there and they were able to see the glacier. They were able to see the ice on the water. They were able to experience it at their level, at their pace. I mean, parents were sitting out, you know, hours on end waiting for this glacier to come. And the kids would have been totally bored sitting up on deck doing that. So they had them up on deck in the sports deck. They had, you know, they could see through the net. They could see the glacier if they wanted to. But they were still doing kids' activities, which was really
cool.
Yeah. And then you could have the goalie, hey, look at that glacier, and then you kick the ball right past them.
Exactly.
What you do.
All right, cheap ways to get by in Alaska. At the port in Vancouver, there will be somebody forcing a coupon book upon you. Take it. Take one for each person in your party. If you want cheap souvenirs, take the coupon book. With the coupon book, we were able to get $1.99 t-shirts. We were able to get cheap, these wooden tong things that you use for salad or pasta.
Yes, we own a pair.
We do too.
I mean, they're just like, you know, like, they look like bear claws.
Yeah.
Say Alaska across the side, $1.99. Perfect souvenir.
That's awesome.
We were able to get three free Ulu knives.
Yes, the Ulu.
Be aware that they will confiscate those when you get on board and give them back to you at the end of the cruise, because they are considered a weapon. But so take the coupon book. There's lots of good deals in there. One of the other things we did is one of the jewelry store chains was offering free coins, collectible coins, and there were like 9 different ones with like Alaska symbols on them. And West really wanted these, so Christy and I went to every jewelry store in every port. There were like 9 of them to get these dang coins for him. And they're free coins, unless of course you buy a ring for your wife, then they don't become free anymore.
Huh. Found that out the hard way, did you?
Yeah. One of the cheap things we did, and it was out of the coupon book, and Skagway, there was a coupon for $19.95 for panning for gold.
Cool.
So,
fun.
Always a fun activity up there.
It was a little place off an alleyway. You know, the address was turn left on the alley and go behind this building.
And then you knocked on the guy's door. And
you knocked 3 times, yeah.
But
it was this little rock shop, basically, gem shop. And they had a couple troughs where in the back where you could pan for gold. So we paid $19.95 for Wes to pan for gold. He says he got some gold, so he was happy. And, you know, compared to the excursions in, say, Juneau, there's a historic gold panning adventure, or historic gold mining and panning adventure for $64 for adults and $38 for kids.
Wow.
So we paid for him to do it. We got to watch, take pictures. He was happy as could be. The other less expensive things we did in Juneau, my wife took a trip up to the state capitol building, and they offer free tours.
Okay.
So she went into the state capitol building and said, I would like a tour. She was the only one there. She got a one-on-one tour of the Alaska state capitol in Juneau.
That's really cool.
Which was kind of cool. There, and nearby there is this Alaska State Museum, and that's only $5.
Right. Really good ideas.
The other last idea I have is the Alaska Brewing Company. If you can get there on the bus or something like that, they have free tastings and free tours of the plant. Actually, not really a tour. They give you the history of the Alaskan Brewing Company and show you some of the original stills and things like that. But it's free tastings. I ended up paying $12 to take a shuttle from... They have a gift shop on the main street with the Alaska, all the Alaska merchandise, Alaska Brewing Company merchandise. And they will take you from there for $12. But you can go over there for an hour or so, have as much beer as you want, and learn more about the Alaska Brewing Company.
And the more beer you drink, the less you learn or remember?
Pretty much, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I was going to ask you what you thought the minimum age for some of those activities were until you came up with the brewery and all that kind of shot that to crap.
The Panic for Gold, I think any kid could do it. She had you know, milk crates and stuff to stand on, so.
Okay.
So that's.
Well, what about the museums? Were the museums focused more towards older children?
I didn't go to the museum.
I
was drinking beer at the time.
How about the Capitol tour?
I wouldn't recommend the Capitol for young kids unless you had some sort of transportation because it was a bit of a walk and it was uphill.
Okay. That's good to know.
But for adults, it's fine. But yeah, little kids, unless you got strollers or something like that.
See, and for me with a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, I don't necessarily want to leave them. You know, my parents drug me all over the country when I was their age. And I don't necessarily want to leave them on the ship in the kids' activities when they should be out with me looking and seeing and doing.
Right.
Did you happen to catch any of the prices for any of the excursions?
I have the list in front of me. What do you want to know?
Just give us an idea of the kind of range of prices for some of them.
Exclusive whale encounter in Mendenhall Glacier, $139. But then you also get to the ones that are like helicopter rides and things like that. In Skagway, you can do the White Pass Scenic Railway.
Well, I did that.
That's $169.
Oh,
but then you
gosh.
Can also do the Dog Sled and Glacier flight scene, which is $549.
Wow. Whoa. Per person.
Per person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, and I think you bring up a really good point about an Alaskan cruise is kind of one of those once-in-a-lifetime things.
Yeah.
Unlike the other cruises where you might go multiple times. So to really make it an experience, like you're saying, there are those free things, but you might want to – if you had to do it over again, then, Tom, you're saying – I would maybe wait a couple more years and save up so you could do all those experiences.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, okay. You still had fun, even though you did
There's no such thing as a bad Disney cruise.
Okay, cool.
Well, it sounds like people have a lot to look forward to and a lot to just be prepared for, too.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your trip with us and a lot of good advice, especially in terms of the budget conscious going on the Alaskan cruise. Thank you very much. And now... By popular demand, Wayne.
No pressure, Wayne.
No pressure by popular demand.
There
if I haven't said the third time, by popular demand, according to the boards, it's time for Wayne to share with us one of his vaunted history segments.
He needs theme music.
I know. I think so. I think we need a theme song. Maybe we could do like a nice like mid-80s rap.
Great.
No, okay. I just wanted to try this. I've always wanted to try mid-80s rap on this show. No, Wayne, please share with
us
about what you're going to tell us about Disneyland today. And what's the topic, Wayne?
Today's topic is the Sleeping Beauty Castle. There is one signature icon that can be found in every Disney park, and that is the castle. It wouldn't be the happiest place on earth or the Magic Kingdom without this centerpiece. It guides us from the entrance and beckons us down Main Street to a land of fantasy. The castle is usually the first thing we look at when we enter the park, and when we see it for the first time, we say, "Now I'm here. Now I'm in the magic." And at the end of the day before we leave, it's the last thing we see. How many of you turn back one last time for a look and say, "Goodbye, I'll see you again real soon"? It has several names depending on its location, but no matter which princess lives there, we love it. And for Walt Disney's original Disneyland, it's the princess home of Sleeping Beauty. The Sleeping Beauty Castle has been around since Disneyland first opened. In fact, the opening ceremonies took place in the castle's forecourt. And because of that, it can be considered to be one of the first attractions opened at Disneyland. For those of you that haven't visited Disneyland, Sleeping Beauty Castle is located similar to other Disney parks. It's just beyond the central hub and directly up from Main Street. The castle is visible from Main Street. Many of you know that Main Street buildings are scaled down in size, which produces an effect called forced perspective. To us, the Main Street buildings appear to be normal size. This makes other smaller objects appear to be normal also, and normal size objects then appear to be much bigger. Thanks to forced perspective, Sleeping Beauty Castle appears huge from the entrance end of Main Street. This was intentional, and one of the effects that Walt learned while he was working in the animation studios. We'll get to why the castle is the size it is a little later. Sleeping Beauty Castle has a small moat in front of it. To enter the castle from the front, you cross a small bridge across the moat and over a real working drawbridge. The drawbridge has been raised and lowered a couple of times in Disneyland's history. The first time was opening day, when one of King Arthur's knights announced the opening of the castle and a rush of children crossed into Fantasyland for the first time. The second time the drawbridge was used was for the rededication for the redesigned Fantasyland back in 1983. Facing the castle's entrance, there is a pathway to the right that leads to a side entrance through the castle walls and into Fantasyland. Along this path is the Snow White Grotto, with those wonderful sculptures of Snow White and her seven dwarfs, and the singing wishing well. As a side note, this area was one of those hidden treasures of Disneyland. Every few minutes, Snow White will sing to the wishing well, and the wishing well sings back. It's a wonderful effect and a great romantic location. I saw a proposal there one night.
You weren't stalking or anything.
No, sir.
No. Okay, I'm just saying. You know what? Has that always been there, the singing part?
Yes.
I just learned something. Okay, note to self. I'm going to go and check that out. How often? Wayne, do you know, does it say how often that happens?
It happens very regularly, just every minute or so.
Yeah, I would say every 5 minutes. Because it takes about 3 minutes to go through the song.
Well, Wayne said every minute or so, and you said every 5 minutes.
See, and I've waited for it to go through.
Oh, I'm getting a look from my wife that how dare you not know that Snow White's Grotto, they do the singing thing. She's just shaking her head like how you could be on this podcast and not know this. Snow White,
yay,
I'm a dude.
Chrissy.
Yeah, I'm a dude, man. I don't check out that. I don't
why is Snow White at Sleeping Beauty's castle?
She's on
good
the side,
question.
But
she's visiting.
Yes, but there is a thing there, and we'll get to that in just a minute. There's also another side path on the left side, which leads from the frontier of side into the Fantasyland. Both of these paths give wonderful views of the castle, especially at night. From the central hub, each themed area of the park has some kind of entrance. Walt always wanted a castle entrance to Fantasyland. Herb Ryman did some initial sketches. Disneyland's castle is based on a real castle located in Bavaria. I've seen some of the pictures of that castle, and the similarities are striking. The biggest difference is that Herb and Walt were experimenting with design on a model of the castle. They were playing with different ways to make it look, and one day Herb turned the top of the castle around backwards. Walt liked it, and that became the castle that we have today. Even the castle itself uses the forced perspective effect. The doors and windows on the bottom are full-sized and get progressively smaller as you go up. The upper turrets are considerably smaller in scale, but you don't notice that, and the effect is that they look even farther away. There is some disagreement on the naming of Sleeping Beauty Castle. A popular notion was that Walt originally conceived the castle as Snow White's Castle. But the Disney Studios was producing the animated film Sleeping Beauty, and the idea was that the castle's name was changed in order to promote the upcoming film, which actually wouldn't be out for another 4 years. But I found another story that suggested that it was actually an accidental slip-up. The story suggested that Walt had always intended the castle to be the Sleeping Beauty Castle, and that in an interview for the popular Disneyland TV show, Walt mistakenly called the castle the Snow White Castle, and the myth was created. Whichever version is correct, the castle remains today as it was on opening day, Sleeping Beauty Castle. So why did Walt want a castle in the first place? Well, Fantasyland was one of those principal themed areas in Disneyland. Fantasyland would be an area where you could experience all the wonders of the classic Disney animated films. Walt commented, quote, "In Fantasyland, these classic stories of everyone's youth have become realities for youngsters of all ages to participate in," unquote. Since most of these stories were set in European locations, Fantasyland was designed similar to a small medieval European village. And every village needs a protecting castle. Architecturally, the castle and its surrounding walls serve several purposes. First, it provides an entrance to Fantasyland. But if you look at an overhead drawing or picture of the area, you will see that it also hides the view of Fantasyland from the hub and nearby surrounding areas. Your only view to Fantasyland from the hub is directly through the castle entrance. The original castle just contained a couple of shops on either side of the entrance breezeway. The castle was much deeper than just a facade wall, and the interior was big enough to accommodate a walkway and some stairs. Walt hated wasted space and wanted to utilize the castle's interior for a walkthrough attraction based on the Sleeping Beauty story. Ken Anderson made some diorama models, and in April of 1957, just 2 years after Disneyland's opening, Walt Disney and Shirley Temple Black hosted the opening of the new Sleeping Beauty Castle walkthrough attraction. Guests enter the attraction from the Fantasyland side of the castle and make their way up one side, up several sets of stairs, over the top of the main castle entrance, and then downstairs to the other side and out again.
Was that a ticketed attraction?
It was a ticketed attraction. The original cost of the ticketed of the attraction was 20 cents, and each guest even got a souvenir booklet of the attraction.
Was it an e-ticket, d-ticket, b, c, or?
At its original, when tickets cost, it was 20 cents. When they converted to the ABC tickets, the walkthrough was an A-ticket attraction.
Thank you.
It's kind of cool that you can actually walk through the castle's interior. And it's decorated and themed like a real castle. You're not just walking up and down a strange queue line. Along the way, guests view diorama scenes which depict the story of Princess Aurora and Prince Philip. Near the top are some stained glass windows which let a little light in, but there aren't any windows which you can actually look outside. I had so wanted that every time I go through there was to be able to look out the windows and see down Main Street. The detailed three-dimensional dioramas include characters, special lighting and sound effects, and some simple mechanical animation. The attraction had a couple of refurbishments over the years, but slowly attendance was dropping. Also, the attraction was unfortunately not handicapped accessible. In later years, there was a concern over the castle's structure and talk of the walkthrough attraction's closure. The problem was that any major retrofit would have also had to include structural improvements to meet the current Anaheim building codes. Then in October 2001, the attraction was declared a security risk. At least that was the official reason. And the walk-through attraction was closed. But in 2008, the attraction got a reprise just after the Blu-ray release of Sleeping Beauty. Imagineers Tony Baxter and Chris Merritt were tasked to come up with some new ideas for the walkthrough. They even uncovered some of the original effects that had been covered up by some of the earlier refurbs. In November 2008, the newly reimagined attraction reopened with updated scenes, special effects, and has been very popular. And for those visitors who are unable to climb the stairs, there is now a virtual walkthrough in a special room near the castle entrance. The room is wonderfully themed and has a high-definition closed-caption presentation of the walkthrough. This is the same recreation included on the Sleeping Beauty 50th Anniversary DVD. So what about the size of Sleeping Beauty Castle? Well, not surprisingly, the biggest factor of all was that Walt had only received so much money for all of Disneyland. It had to be stretched pretty thin for absolutely everything. Rides, attractions, restaurants, shops, facilities, parking, utilities, and everything else had to be provided with the available funds. So when it came to the structures that were basically only scenic pieces, well, they had to be economized. That is also partially why Main Street and the castle are scaled down with forced perspective. They are smaller and so cost less to build. Another reason which to Walt was just as important was that he recalled that the nobles of Europe built very large, imposing castles in order to intimidate the peasants. Walt wanted his castle to be friendly, so he built it on a smaller scale. From the moat to the top of the turrets is only 77 feet. And lastly, we have to think about the time when Disneyland was built and what else was typical. Remember that theme parks did not exist, and that amusement parks of the time had no scenic elements at all. Miniature golf was pretty popular back in the 50s, and as many of you who have played the game may recall, almost every course has a castle. Well, compared to those, the Disneyland castle was going to be huge. And in fact, guests of the time commented how enormous the Sleeping Beauty castle appeared. And to be able to actually go over the drawbridge and enter through the castle's entrance, well, that was a real treat, and no one had been able to do that before. Walt's Sleeping Beauty Castle was one of the biggest hits of the park and is still today one of the most photographed sites within Disneyland. So Disneyland is now over 50 years old, and so is the castle. Why doesn't Disney tear down the castle and build a bigger one like the one in Florida? I leave it to my colleagues to express how likely that would be and what the Disneyland outcry would be at the mere thought.
Yeah.
I love the facts that you just shared. The fact that Walt's handprints and fingerprints are all over that castle, and the reason of it being the size it is because it was supposed to be inviting and not intimidating. And I just love that you shared that part, and makes us why we love Disneyland's castle the way it is.
I think Sleeping Beauty Castle will remain the size that it is, and we all love it. In fact, I found a direct quote from Imagineer Tony Baxter at a fan event in 1989, quote, "And ours? It may be smaller, but it looks a lot better than the one in Florida," unquote.
Tony Baxter.
Yes.
If you go inside the castle's entrance and pause just before you enter Fantasyland itself, you will see an ornate chandelier hanging from the overhead ceiling on the backside of the castle. Directly underneath the chandelier, embedded in the stone walkway, you will find a little brass disc. This is an official survey marker. Now, there are also some disagreements about what the survey marker actually represents. But I did some research some time ago, and I believe this to be true. This is the original geographic center of the full Disneyland property area. That includes the park, the public areas, and the surrounding service areas. This was the place where Walt and his friends stood in the orange grove, and Walt put his stick in the ground and said that this is where he wanted the castle. As I said, there are some disagreements about this, and my response is, don't spoil my magic. Even if the spot is an exact spot, go there, and you can be sure that at some point, Walt Disney himself stood on that spot and looked through the castle down to Main Street. Trust me, it'll give you a thrill. Sleeping Beauty Castle contains many references to the story and the animated film. In the breezeway, there are some wonderful murals depicting scenes from the Sleeping Beauty film. Rather than typical castle gargoyles, the woodland animals, who had befriended Princess Aurora, are perched along the castle. There's also a bronze statue of Princess Aurora dancing with Prince Philip. One of the shops on the Fantasyland side of the Sleeping Beauty Castle is now the popular Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique. This is a very special beauty salon where any young girl can be magically transformed into the princess of her dreams. The shop does hairstyling, gowns, and accessories. And
they,
you can
do
wear
they have
your
tutus and wings?
I think they might have something.
And the best part, need to be magically transformed, so be it.
And the best part is that you get to wear your new look all day in the park.
So that will not happen. I have to add that. That will not happen. Not throughout the whole park. But the magically transformed, okay, but not the rest of the day. Back to the historical perspective.
Across from the boutique is the Castle Heraldry Shop, where you can find your family's coat of arms and history. I was surprised because they actually had my family name. There is a coat of arms that hangs in the front of the castle just above the entrance. It's believed to be the Disney family coat of arms, but that seems to be a myth. The coat of arms was not originally on the castle, but appeared sometime in 1965. At night, Sleeping Beauty Castle is the centerpiece for the fireworks show. Viewing the fireworks with a good view of the castle is the best, and now that Tinkerbell can fly up and down and back and forth over the castle, it's a must-see. In recent years, the castle has also provided a backdrop for all kinds of projections during the various seasonal fireworks shows. One of the most notable is the Halloween Scream Show, which features a floating Jack Skellington head and a number of fireworks, and lighting effects on the castle. And of course, I couldn't leave a discussion of Sleeping Beauty's castle without mentioning the absolutely wonderful transformation that takes place during the Christmas holidays. This is without a doubt one of the best decoration overlays within Disneyland. The castle is decorated top to bottom and is covered in snow and icicles. In the daytime, it looks spectacular. At night, the castle transforms during a special show when it appears to snow while Disney snow falls on the guests. The castle is lit with thousands of gorgeous lights. The music is very powerful, and for me, it's one of the most moving and memorable parts of the holidays at Disneyland. There's so much more about the Sleeping Beauty Castle. You wouldn't think that there would be so much around a piece of scenery that only contains a small A-ticket attraction. But I think for most of us, it's one of the greatest landmarks inside Disneyland. And remember, the next time you play miniature golf, look at the castle and remember the Sleeping Beauty Castle at Disneyland. It might be small, but we love it. It greets us, and it wishes us farewell. It stands watch over Disneyland, and we wouldn't trade it for the world.
And that'll do it for this week's Disneyland edition of the Diz Unplugged. Thanks for listening.